Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Recorded in 1999, Dr. Renato Del Becco, President Emeritus, Salk Institute, 1975 Nobel Prize winner in psychology and medicine, and Dr. Joseph P. Noel, Assistant Professor, Salk Institute, discuss the relationship between DNA, proteins, and disease. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
We start by thinking how our cells work. And we know that everything depends on the presence of genes which are in the cell. There are maybe 100,000 genes in the cell, but only some are functional in each type of cell. And for a gene to be functional means to make a protein, which is a special molecule, because the proteins are those that do everything in cells. Now, the protein has an interesting feature that is made as a filament of pieces called amino acids. But this filament finally has to fold to form a more complex structure, because by itself the filament cannot work. And this is an interesting problem in biology, which is very relevant to what we're going to talk about. And we will look into this problem soon, very closely. When there is a disease, the disease is very often, most cases, caused by alterations which have to do with the gene. A gene is altered, then the protein is altered, and the disease is produced. Or the protein could be altered independent of the gene, and still we get disease. But especially for infectious disease, like virus disease, hereditary disease, we generally have to do with changes in the gene. Now, In the majority of these cases, disease appears because the protein is not made, or if it is made, it cannot function for a variety of reasons. Now, in the last several years, a really important discovery has been made of a new agent, something called prions. This was discovered by people looking at infectious diseases like kuru. Kuru is a disease in tropical countries. When cultural reasons, when somebody dies, the people eat the brain of the dead person. Well, the brain of the dead person has something in it which can be transmitted and cause, in time, the people who ate it to develop the same disease. And there are others, for instance, there's something called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which used to be fairly common when the growth hormone was made from extracting the hormone from cadavers, from this little gland near the brain. And sometimes cadavers came from people who had, again, a disease, similar kind of disease, and this got transmitted to the people who received the hormone. Of course, fortunately, this doesn't happen anymore, because hormone is made by engineering. So now, when these prion disease were discovered, people thought they were caused by viruses. But then they went to look for viruses, for genes, for DNA, RNA, and they didn't find any. After a long analysis, we had to conclude no. So the disease is only due to the protein itself, which malfunctions. And the basic malfunction has to do with this folding problem that we talked about, and I will ask Joe here now to tell us, because Joe is a specialist in this particular area.
I think the best way to start out is to talk a little bit about protein structure and why they have particular folds. So Renato had talked about the fact that proteins are made up of these building blocks of amino acids, and it's linked in a special fashion. And there are 20 of these unique building blocks that when they're linked in a particular fashion, and they could be small proteins in the tens of amino acids linked together, all the way up to things that have thousands of amino acids linked together in one chain. And each of these amino acids has a very special property associated with it. And the sequence in which these amino acids are linked together will determine, in large part, how these particular filaments will fold into three dimensions, into a defined structure. Originally, it was thought that the particular sequence of the protein would give rise to only one particular fold of that particular protein. But we now know that that's not the case. that there are, in many cases, proteins have accessible to them several different folds. And in the case of the amyloid protein, or the protein involved in the prion diseases, that certainly is the case, that it's the context in which the filament or these linked amino acids appear in the cell can give rise to more than one fold. In some cases, the ability to have different structures associated with protein is useful and an important property of a protein. But in some cases, only one of those folds gives rise to the property that's associated with the protein normally functioning. And if it then is allowed to pass that stage into this misfolding, one can have some serious consequences. And that's certainly the case in the prion proteins, which have this ability to exist in two different forms, one form being an insoluble plaque-like form that gives rise to the neurological defects associated with diseases caused by prions and other similar kinds of diseases.
So now that we have this idea, we can therefore look at this phenomenon. We have a gene which makes a normal protein, but under certain conditions, this protein can change structure, and when this happens, then this can be cause disease. Now, this doesn't happen nor only in prion disease, because there are other diseases which are not infectious, and therefore we don't think of them as prions, in which something similar happens also. And for instance, there is a well-known disease called Alzheimer's disease, which is a disease of old people, in which quite a large number of millions of people in this country suffer with this disease. There are a much rarer disease, but it's also interesting, called Huntington disease. The alterations of the gene which can cause both genes, but both disease, are not the same, actually quite different. But in the end, they all come to this point that the proteins made is somewhat changed, and this caused then the disease. And then, in addition to that, there are another dozen at least of diseases, much less known, in which something like this happens again, and the protein gets misfolded. And maybe in this case, instead of misfunctioning, it just get trapped inside the cell, so that the cell cannot utilize it. And this is the most common situation. So this question of the structure of the protein, whether it is properly folded or not, has tremendous significance. I mean, that really determines whether the protein will work or will not work. Now, we, in the case of, there are some interesting questions in these various diseases. For instance, in the case of Alzheimer's, we know that the protein, which is, there are two proteins actually in this disease, which are misfolded. But one is the one that makes the lesions which are known for the disease, so-called plaques, which are in the brain, in many parts of the brain. And these plaques can be recognized because they can be stained, especially with a special dye, Congo red, which does not stain other parts of the brain. And the interesting thing is this, that this the protein which gives rise to these plaques is actually a fragment of a normal protein. Now, normally this protein is cut into several pieces, and one piece normally is made up of 40 amino acids. But if this for alterations of various kind is cut in such a way as to make a piece of 42 or 43 amino acids, then this causes the disease. So there is a difference between these two proteins. It's just a question of adding two normal amino acids, because these are not normal. So why will this cause this tremendous change?
Very often the protein structure is very context dependent. This is clearly a case of that, where the amino acids in this 43 amino acid piece obviously see basically the same environment as they see in the normal fragment, except for now we have two very subtle changes. And it's very clear that even one amino acid difference in a linear chain of amino acids that are in a protein can give rise to very different folds. So in the case of this particular protein, we now have the protein is chemically slightly different because of the presence of these extra amino acids, which gives rise to a different fold, and in this case, a fold that's involved in attainment of this disease state. But there are many cases of proteins that are quite large, nearly 500, 600, 700 amino acids in length that have a single point mutation in them. That means that 599 of the 600 amino acids are basically the same. But now with this single point mutation, you can give rise to a very bad fold of the protein or an altered activity. It's a very, very subtle thing to think about, but the reality is that that these structures can be altered quite substantially.
Is this because this, for instance, in the case of the Alzheimer's, these extra amino acids, they will, as the protein folds, will connect with other amino acids, which normally remain unconnected, so to say, something like that.
Exactly, it's who they see and who they interact with, and in this special case, we normally think of a protein as having a single linear chain that folds up into a what we would call a globular fold, somewhat spherical to think about. But it's also the case that these single linear chains can interact with other linear chains. And in the case of these plaque proteins, the presence of these other amino acids allow that to happen. And we get a phenomenon known as aggregation. And what that means is that a number of these chains actually come together in physical proximity to one another and chemically interact and cause this formation of this insoluble aggregate. And the presence of these extra few amino acids allow this particular thing to happen.
And this is also the reason why these proteins cannot be digested by the regular mechanism, because cells have mechanisms to get rid of altered proteins, but in this case they fail.
Exactly. I mean, the cell is very unique. It has this wonderful ability to detect, just like our immune system can detect foreign pathogens, our cells also have a series of proteins that are known as proteases within them that can detect misfolded proteins, chew them up into their little bits, the amino acid bits, and clear themselves of this problem. However, proteases also are proteins. They recognize a particular shape associated with a protein, and they have to have accessibility to that. In the case of these plaques, there are these very large aggregates. They're inaccessible, and therefore they have a tendency to build up. The other, and these proteases can't gain access to them. The other significant problem associated with these plaques is that it's a process that we would call a cooperative process. You could think of it as a process that gets faster and faster as it occurs, rather than marching along in a linear fashion. That is, as these plaques begin to form, they nucleate the formation of even larger plaques. That means that this process occurs in a much faster context, which is a serious problem associated with plaque formation.
And another question comes to mind is this. There is a disease, genetic disease, called Down disease, where there's an extra chromosome in the cells. And this chromosome is the one which is responsible for making, as it contains the gene and makes these particular proteins. Now, these people also undergo Alzheimer at a very young age, although they have no alterations in the gene. So only because too much of the protein is made. And this, how to, can be explained?
I think this is a perfect lead-in from my previous comment about the fact that these proteins, this cooperative process where you get an aggregate that forms and the process speeds up. In this particular case, the concentration of the protein is critical. We know this from our own work in the lab, that you can alter the physical properties of the protein simply by altering its concentration. And this process, this cooperative process of this plaque formation, speeds up as the protein concentration is raised. And this is clearly an example.
Yeah. And then the presence of this altered proteins, they are responsible for the disease. Lots of cells die. And now this is a different problem because there are probably many mechanisms by which this happens. And these are being studied very, very intensively. Now, So we now have shown, have come to the conclusion, looking at the, what has been done so far, that there are various ways by which a change in the structure of a protein can be responsible for disease. So let's think a moment whether, by chance, it is possible that the same phenomenon occurs as being responsible for something physiological, like aging, senescence. Now, I've been thinking about this, and I've been looking to the literature to see what is known about senescence and aging, and the causes of senescence, but very little real is known. There are a number of conditions which make life shorter, and this, of course, is understandable, because if one introduces a poison somewhere in the body, finally life will be shorter. So all the conditions which make life shorter have nothing to do with the real phenomenon of senescence. The important thing would be to see whether our condition make life longer, genetic alterations. Well, in mammals, the only situation which I know that seems to make life somewhat longer is to eat less, to have less food. I mean, rats kept with a very minimal diet live longer than the others. And in a way, to me, this makes me think, you know, just like the Down syndrome situation with Alzheimer. If we eat less, we make fewer proteins, maybe the proteins are more diluted, and therefore maybe that decreases the chance of senescence. In terms of real genetic studies, there are studies made with insects, like the Drosophila fly, or the Semiorbitis elegans, which is a worm, a very small worm. And but these studies in which they prove that there are changes which increase the lengths of the lifespan are very complicated and difficult to interpret, because these animals go through a series of transitions of very forms. And usually these genetic changes, what do? They lengthen one of these particular forms, which in most cases is a kind of latent form. So it's not really the same as senescence. So the question is, therefore, is it possible, therefore, that senescence is some kind of due to accumulation of altered protein? And I was just thinking there are some kind of hints, maybe, that one can think. Because, for instance, we know that cells have all these complicated mechanisms to get rid of altered protein. So obviously altered protein are very bad, and selection has taken care of that. Then also the organization of our body in terms of differentiation. Any organ, usually, this is known especially well for, of course, the blood system, immune system. But in general, this I think is true for most organs, that they have an arrangement by which there are some cells which remain there with latent, which means they don't function. They live, but they don't function. And then occasionally this gives rise to a cell which can function. This multiplies, makes a certain number of cells. They last for a short time, and then they die. And they are replaced by a new group of cells. So it seems to me that this would be just a mechanism that one would use to decrease the damage produced by altered proteins, because the genes are still there all the time. But the protein is not made in the latent cell, in the stem cell. It's only made in this particular group, and then they get rid of it. And so, I mean, this again is a possibility that senescence is due to accumulation of altered protein.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it? That in a sense, death is good in this case for a
exactly,
longer life.
Absolutely.
So in this case, you sacrifice the few for the good of the many.
And in fact, all cells have a complicated mechanism for dying, for causing death, if things are not right. So that seems. But now, assuming that this is the case, how would we find out?
it's interesting. I think that it's clearly proteins are involved in this process. And when you were talking, I was sort of struck by the comment when you were talking about the fact that one way in which it clearly we can lengthen our lifespan is by consuming less food. And it's interesting that when you look at the animal kingdom, for instance, if you look at turtles, which have a considerable lifespan, some turtles have been known to live for 150, 200, 250 years. And the question is, what is unique about turtles and other reptiles that have those kinds of lifespan? And it has to do with the fact that they have a very low metabolism, which is what happens, in a sense, when we begin to consume less food, that we can alter our metabolism to some extent. Now, the reason why, or the theory is that in these cases, with a very rapid metabolism, that is, we're very active and consuming a great deal of oxygen, which we need to live, we produce a lot of very potent oxidants in the body. And these oxidants can be very damaging to our cells. They can damage DNA, so they can actually alter things at the level of the DNA and the gene level. But what clearly is appearing also to occur is that they do damage to proteins. And there are a variety of proteins within the body that, for instance, aren't cleared by this process of proteolysis. They actually have to stay around for some time. Some of the proteins involved in the physical structures, the skin proteins, proteins involved in the formation of bone, have to have a bit of a longer lifespan than the proteins that are rapidly turned over. But that also means that they're exposed to the environment for longer periods of time, and they can accumulate defects. So when we spoke about the fact that there are 20 amino acids and they give rise to a particular protein fold, when proteins are altered by oxidants, they're chemically altered. So in effect, we're creating new amino acids, chemically altered amino acids. And we already know that by changing the amino acids within a normal protein, we can alter its shape. And that's what happens in the case of these oxidants. So I think we can now begin, in the case of senescence, begin to look for these kinds of defects in mature proteins in the body. Are they accumulating these kinds of defects? There's a case, for instance, where proteins are altered by sugars, which leads to folding defects, the formation of altered proteins with now either they're non-functioning or they have altered functions that have serious consequences. And again, it's related
to altered by sugar means the sugar attached to the protein itself, and therefore they change it. The characteristic of the amino acid.
Exactly. So the sugar glucose itself is it turns out reactive with particular kinds of amino acids and proteins, can physically alter them, and lead to accumulated defects that give rise to.
Also, one consideration to make is this, that we talk about the DNA and protein as if they were fundamentally two different things, but this is not true, because the DNA responds to the protein. But the proteins are responsible to maintain the DNA, because all the signals that DNA gets are from proteins. And then proteins can do things like adding special groups to DNA, like methyl group, and then that shuts off genes, for instance. Or they can alter the protein associated with DNA, the chromatin with acetylation. And again, this affects. So, I mean, protein and DNA, in effect, are not really two separate things. They're essentially part of a unique system, very extremely well integrated and very complex.
Absolutely. I mean, we as scientists separate the two only because that makes it a little bit easier to study them. Yeah. But we always have to view them as a whole, as a finely tuned machine that has ways of dealing with alterations in that machine and correcting defects. But in many cases, it's the accumulation of defects that the body has trouble dealing with.
Certainly, this is a field which is a very young field to understand the real. I mean, the structure of protein started being determined quite a long time ago, but just only now we really understand more and more deeply how the structure is made, are determined, and what consequence it has. And I'm sure that lots of interesting things will come out in the future. And maybe the study of senescence may be one of them.
I think so. I think that it's clearly the direction in the field in terms of protein structure is understanding how a particular amino acid sequence results in particular folds, and how those folds can be altered. And we still, it's a very rich field. Yeah. There's a lot that has to be done. We know a lot about what the shapes of proteins are and how they function in normal cases, but we actually know very little about what happens when there are particular genetic defects, or in the case of this chemical modification that can occur in altered senescence. So there's clearly much more to be done.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.